Call the Senate Finance Committee to order. Today's April 14th, 2026. We're in the Senate Finance Room, State Capitol. Present today, Chairman Olson, Chairman Stedman, Senator Keel, Senator Merrick, Senator Kaufman, Senator Cronk, and myself. Senator Hoffman, we have two items on today's agenda. First being HB 17, Disabled Veterans. The second item is HB 48, Civil Legal Services Fund. We're getting into taking care of the other body's business. Item one, HB 17, Disabled Veteran Retirement Benefits. This is the first hearing on this bill. I invite Senator Rauscher and his staff to the table to introduce Senate Bill 17 to the committee. Senator Rauscher, bring up whoever you need to assist you.
For the record, my name is Senator George Rauscher, District O, covering Valdez to Healy. I want to thank co-chairs, Senator Hoffman, Senator Olson, Senator Stedman, and the members of the Senate Finance Committee for the willingness to hear HB 17. HB 17 would allow veterans that receive a 100% and total disability rating from the VA to access their accrued PERS benefits at any age without a penalty. The bill also allows military service that has been purchased in accordance with the PERS standard to count toward their credited service requirements for the normal retirement. Veterans with permanent and total disabilities often encounter significant barriers to employment and financial stability due to service-connected health concerns and conditions. Their physical ability to work an entire 30 or 40-year career is short-circuited by these health reasons. Obtaining 100% disability rating is also a challenging process, and very few veterans can attain that. The bill does not expand benefits, but simply removes unnecessary hurdles for disabled veterans by taking a meaningful step toward providing stability and certainty for those who sacrificed their bodies, who sacrificed their lives, and for our nation at a time when they need it the most. If it's the will of the committee, my staff, Isabella Ordez, will go over the sectional. If not, we do have invited testimony.
We'll go to invited testimony. This is a little bit unusual. Today we have a bill that Representative Rauscher introduced, and he's in the Senate now, so we're hearing a House bill that was sponsored by Senator Rauscher when he was a representative. A little unusual. So we do have invited testimony. We'll go to Mark Weisenhunt, a veteran with the U.S. Army. He's in person. Please come forward, identify yourself for the record, and proceed with your invited testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for hearing this today. My name is Mark Weisenhunt. I'm advocating for disabled veterans and hope that you all support HB 17 for the following reasons. Disabled veterans often face challenges like limited employment opportunities, difficulties in accessing quality health care, and higher rates of mental health issues such as PTSD. The transition to civilian life can be particularly challenging. Some service members find themselves contributing to their communities through state and local government services. As they make the transition from active duty to civilian life, veterans often downplay the physical or emotional impact of their service. However, it's important to recognize that for some, these impacts simply cannot be ignored. There's a class of veterans who are totally and permanently disabled, and they can face even greater struggles to work and keep gainful employment due to their service-connected disabilities. As such, this class of veteran often struggles with income stability. Through the years, not only have I personally experienced these challenges, but I have watched many of those I served with face similar obstacles. I recently realized that something can be done to help and that you all have the power and the ability to make a difference. HB 17 can serve a crucial role in addressing the unique needs of disabled veterans in state and local government service. Supporting this legislation shows that, by supporting this legislation, you are showing your commitment to our veterans who have dedicated their lives to serving our country and our communities with pride and distinction. HB 17 allows totally and permanently disabled veterans to access the retirement benefits they earned through their state and local service at a time they need it most. This legislation offers a lifeline as they navigate the financial, physical, and emotional challenges related to their service-connected disabilities. The VA authored a study in 2019 on the mortality rate of 100% service-connected disabled veterans. This study revealed that this small group of U.S. veterans have a significantly diminished life expectancy when compared to the U.S. civilian population. Women have a 22% reduced life expectancy, and men have an 11% reduced life expectancy. So what does this mean? It means that our disabled veterans are dying significantly earlier than their civilian counterparts. This underscores a difficult reality, that many of these veterans have fewer working years and greater long-term health challenges. HB 17 addresses this issue in a targeted and responsible way. It allows totally and permanently disabled veterans to access the retirement benefits they've already earned through their public service at a time they need it most. This is not a handout. This simply removes barriers that prevent disabled veterans from using what they've already earned through their service and dedication. It is my belief that allowing a small group of totally and permanently disabled veterans to access their earned retirement benefits will not create an undue strain on the PERS system. What it will do is provide stability to those whose ability to continue to work has been significantly impacted by their service. I respectfully ask all of you to stand united and vote in favor of HB 17. I'm happy to answer any questions, and I do thank you for your time and for your service to our state.
Thank you, Mr. Wisenhunt. Also available for questions for the committee members, we have Brandon Roomsburg with the Division of Retirement and Benefits online. Also online, we have Christopher Novel, also with the Division of Retirement and Benefits. Do members have questions of the sponsor at this point? Senator Stedman.
Just on the, just looking at the fiscal note, it's zero, but in the definition it says any unfunded, this will create additional unfunded liability to the plan because employer costs are capped at 22% of pay. Any excess costs will be paid by the state of Alaska through charges to the PERS additional state contributions. So has this been calculated? Because that certainly is not zero, as the front page of the fiscal note represents.
Mr. Roomsburg or Mr. Novell, did you hear Senator Stedman's question, and do you have a response?
So, through the chair, for the record, this is Christopher Novell from the Division of Retirement and Benefits. I can take this question if you like.
Please.
Okay, through the chair to Senator Stedman, yes, there will absolutely be some form of unfunded liability to the plan, as you said, because employer costs are capped at 22% and anything over that will be. But in providing a fiscal note, or at least based on an actuarial analysis, there are too many unknowns as it stands. There's the number of members who are ultimately impacted, that's an unknown. The number of years of military service to claim, that's an unknown. So all of those, and what we tracked, means that it would be, there are too many unknowns to do a safe actuarial analysis. Clear, Chair.
Senator Stedman.
Okay, so if I understood that, there's not an ability to calculate the cost issue. And then there's two major components. One, or divisions, I guess. One is state employees. That's about half of the group. You know, all your municipalities, hospitals, and so on and so forth that belong. And then you have the state. And clearly the state is obligated to its full share. But there is concern of any liability created at City Hall, lack of a better term for all non-state employers, basically 140 some odd of them, 144 some number, then that falls back to the state because of the 22 cap. So anyway, it's just kind of a point that that is of a concern, and when we don't know the fiscal impacts of any change to our retirement system, because once you implement them, you can't take them back, the one-way door, because you can't diminish benefits. You can certainly increase them, but you can't take them away. So I'm not, I don't have a position on this bill and the subject matter, but the mechanics of dealing with the retirement system is always of a issue at the table. Because this year we've got over $200 million going into the unfunded liability.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. Comments, Senator Rauscher?
Yeah, through the chair, for the record, Senator Rauscher, District O, there is an estimated impact of 48 possible service VA that will actually that could take advantage of this. Now, not all of those will, and a lot of them are already they've done maybe 20 years or 30 years in a 40. So a lot of them have already put a lot of years in. We're not talking about all 48 starting out with 3 years here in the PERS system. So this is going to be a very finite small number that may outlive their benefits, just to reiterate what we're actually looking at in our opinion. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Rauscher. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator, thanks for bringing forward something for disabled veterans. I have a couple of questions just about the mechanics of how it works, and I don't know if you'd prefer to answer them or Mr. Roomsburg. But I guess the first thing I want to make sure I understand, today, any PERS member in the defined benefit system who wants credit for their military time can get that, but they need to pay for that time. Is that correct?
I'll defer to Senator Rauscher, District O. I'd like to defer to Mark here for a minute, and if he would like to, he could defer to the
Mr. Weisenhut.
Through the chair, thank you, Senator, for that question. There is a purchase opportunity, and for the groups that are affected by this, the tiers 1, 2, and 3, most of tier 1 is retired just due to longevity, and that is also true for tier 2. So primarily this would affect tier 3. And those individuals can purchase up to 5 years of eligible service, and that's at 8.5% of their vesting year. So if somebody made an average of $50,000 or vesting year, they would pay 8.5% of that times each year in which they would like to purchase. So if they wanted to purchase a full 5 years, if they were eligible for that, it would cost them between $20,000 and $25,000 to purchase that with no additional input or cost from the state or their employee. That's solely on them.
Senator Keel.
Thank you. And so under the bill, for a service-disabled veteran, that would no longer have a cost, right? We would pick that up on the system.
Through the chair, no, Senator. That's still fully – this does not change that purchase process at all. The purchase process still falls on that service member, and that employee does not fall to the state to utilize any type of funds to purchase those years. The change would be those years that are purchased would effectively apply to their 30-year fulfillment.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wonder if there may be an unintended consequence of one of the repealers in the bill. Because when someone claims their time, they have the option of paying in a lump sum. They could also pay overtime, in installments. And my understanding of it now is if you don't have it paid off by the time you're ready to take a PERS retirement, then your benefit is reduced. The time doesn't count.
That's correct.
The bill, I think, repeals that. So in essence, if you qualify for this, you don't have to make the payments. You still get the credit. Am I misunderstanding that?
Mr. Reisenhunt.
Through the chair, when we worked with the law office and we crafted this language, it was my understanding that while it's being repealed, it doesn't mean that the staff don't pay anymore. That just means that it is no longer a barrier to count towards your 30 years beforehand. As it is today, you have to work your full 30 years, and any time purchased is added on at the end after you meet your 30 years. And so with this, when you purchase your time, it counts towards those 30 years.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the intent. I wonder if we could hear from the division about whether they share that interpretation of this, of these repealers, or if there might be a disconnect.
We will get that in writing and have the response for the committee in writing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sir. And then the other question, just on the mechanics, make sure I understand how the proposal works. Today, that up to 5 years of military time can count towards your benefit at the end, but it can't count toward getting you vested. Does this allow, again, we're talking about service disabled veterans, does this allow them to count that toward getting vested in the pension benefit or the health benefit?
Through the chair, it does not change that process. You still have to work your 5 years to be vested.
Senator Keel.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I wonder whether that changes for peace officers and firefighters, again, with a different repealer section. So if we could get that from the division, just so I understand exactly how the mechanics work. Thank you.
Yes. Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I'm equally concerned about the repealers, that we just understand them, because this subject gets so complex, it's like whack-a-mole. You move one issue and something else pops up, and you don't know if it's, what the cost-benefit is. And looking at the first repealer, the last sentence in the fiscal note, by repeal of this section, all members of the PERS would be able to use military service to meet the 30 years of service requirement to retire at any age, but would pay only 8.5% of their annualized first salary in the PERS-covered position. That doesn't sound like the math would work, dealing with the, at least that would be my initial impression. I think that needs to be looked at by the Department of Retirement and Benefits. Because they've never met an 8.5% target. And we've argued about that at the table, so I think we need to figure out where that 8.5% came from and the ramifications of it. And Mr. Chairman, I'd suggest that we get a review, as Senator Keel mentioned, of all three different repealers so we understand what we're doing.
We'll get those. And if you have specific language you want to give to the retirement and benefits for response, we could work on that through Senator Olson's office. Further questions? Seeing none, we will at this time open the public testimony section of this meeting. And we will go to Palmer, where we will hear from Jason Ortiz. You have 2 minutes of testimony. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, my name is Jason Ortiz. I'm testifying on my own behalf, and thank you to the chair as a member of the Senate Finance. I'm here in support of HB 17 because this bill, it affects real people that I personally know here in the Mat-Su. And veterans who are outstanding public servants. These are individuals who want to keep working, but their service-connected permanent disabilities make continued employment just extremely difficult. So this gives them a fair, dignified option to retire earlier and access their benefits that they've already earned, nothing more. It's a very narrow and responsible bill. It doesn't create new benefits. It's optional to the person, and it applies to a very small, clearly defined group. And I think HB 17 recognizes the severe service-connected disability, how it alters a person's work timeline. And our retirement system should reflect that reality. And so for the veterans that I know, for the communities like ours here and across Alaska, I respectfully urge you all to advance this non-controversial legislation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ortiz. We will stay in Palmer and hear from Austin Flavin. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with our 2 minutes of testimony.
Austin Flavin, Palmer, Alaska. I thank you for hearing the bill. I do ask for your support. Just a little background on myself. I was Tier 3 when I decided to enlist in the U.S. Navy. Served for 6 years, 5 separate deployments, including a 7-month deployment to Iraq. I was lucky enough, blessed enough to come back home. Immediately returned into PERS service after moving back to Alaska. I did take advantage of buying my 5 years back. I purchased that time back, and it cost me upward of, $30,000 or so. I believed it to be a good perk and investment at the time. As, my time from enlistment ended to working in the PERS system, I was soon began experiencing issues that were linked to prior service and attained a rating from the VA. And with that comes, many appointments, many documentations, and so forth. I know now from, my health conditions that I'm looking, likely staring down the barrel of a, shorter lifespan or quality of life even over the time. That, I live, work, and so on. And I feel this bill will, help people like myself. It will help the entire bill's sections, the 1, 2, and 3 for the permanent and permanently disabled veterans. It will help those folks. And I just feel that the typical lifespan for, veterans, permanently and totally disabled, rated VA, their lifespan is going to be shorter, and they will not, may not get to enjoy that retirement that they've earned through PERS service, much like their civilian counterparts as long. I do take pride in trying to, stay healthy and take care of myself and take into consideration my health conditions, to, maximize my quality of life. However, there is a real, it is a real scenario with, health conditions and everything that accompanies them. And I feel that this is a fair bill to support veterans, disabled veterans that have served their country honorably. And it seems like how I read the bill, most folks have already bought into a benefit. They're just able to collect on it a little bit earlier, possibly. I do thank you for taking the time to listen. I appreciate it. And if anything else, thanks for moving this bill along and considering it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Flavin, and thank you for your many years of service to our country. Is there anyone else online to testify on this bill? Is there anybody in the audience that would like to testify? Closing comments, Senator Rauscher. Before we review the fiscal notes.
I appreciate the committee. Senator Rauscher, District O, for the record. Senator Huffman, I appreciate the fact that you guys are hearing this bill. Appreciate the fact that you are taking into consideration the importance of this bill, and I just appreciate the fact that we're able to be able to present it. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Rauscher. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 17 has one fiscal note from the Department of Administration. The Division of Retirement and Benefits puts forward an indeterminate fiscal note and notes that they would need to change some regulations. The second page of that fiscal note has a great deal of analysis in text, and we'll look forward to the responses on the details.
Thank you, Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank Senator Rauscher for bringing this bill forward, and hopefully we can work out some details to make sure this works. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Kronk. Any additional comments by Senate Finance members? Seeing none, we'll set this bill aside. I'm sure we'll be seeing it in the near future. That brings us to our second item on today's agenda, which is HB 48, Civil Legal Services Fund. This is the first hearing on this bill. I invite Representative Hannon and her staff to the table to introduce the legislation to the committee. Please come forward. You see your staff coming forward. Hunter Meacham, please identify yourself for the record and introduce the legislation to the committee.
Good morning. My name is Hunter Meacham. I work for Representative Hannon. Unfortunately, she is unable to be here this morning. She is down on the House floor, but she asked me to pass along her regrets and her many thanks to you for hearing the bill this morning. HB 48 helps to safeguard low-income Alaskans' access to civil legal services in the state by increasing the court system filing fees that the legislature may appropriate to the Civil Legal Services Fund from 10% to 25%. So the Civil Legal Services Fund was created in 2007, and initially the fund was only comprised of 50% of punitive damages awarded in civil cases to the state, and the awarding of punitive damages is extremely rare. And so in 2018, the legislature came together out of understanding that the funding was not, was out, the need was outpacing the funding for civil legal services in the state, and updated the statute to allow for 10% of the court system filing fees to be appropriated to the fund. And so the need has again outpaced the funding, and I believe that this bill has been around for a while and has passed the Senate a legislature ago unanimously, out of understanding that the need for this funding has increased. So,
thank you, Ms. Meacham. Do members of the committee have questions of Ms. Meacham at this point? Seeing none, we will go to invited testimony and hear from Alaska Legal Services Corporation, Maggie Hume, the executive director. Please come forward and identify yourself for the record and proceed with your invited testimony.
Good morning. My name is Maggie Hum. I'm the Executive Director of Alaska Legal Services. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the committee for hearing this bill today. I also want to thank Representative Hannon's office for carrying this bill, and Senator Dunbar as well, who has carried SB1, which is the Senate companion bill. Alaska Legal Services is a nonprofit law firm that has provided free critical legal services to low-income Alaskans in all corners of our state since 1967, so for almost 60 years. The services we provide help Alaskans from domestic, help protect Alaskans from domestic violence and other abuse, protect Alaskans' livelihoods and benefits to which they are legally entitled, and help Alaskans gain access to health care and maintain safe housing. We strive to be responsive in emergencies in our communities where legal rights are implicated, including to Typhoon Halong and the many other natural disasters that have occurred over the last several years. In state fiscal year 25, through our 13 locations across the state, we provided legal assistance in over 5,400 cases, impacting nearly 15,000 Alaskans in 211 of our communities. We reached thousands more through legal education, outreach, and self-help resources. Nearly one-third of our clients were seniors. Nearly one-third were experiencing disabilities. Hundreds, at least 17%, were impacted by domestic violence, and at least 6% identified as veterans. The critical legal services that we provide stabilize households that are in crisis and help to prevent problems upstream. In doing this, we save the state, our local communities, and Alaskans money. Legal aid has a 7-to-1 return on investment. These returns come in a variety of ways, and I'd like to share a few examples with you. Helping families to avoid illegal or unnecessary eviction, often working cooperatively with landlords to solve problems, save shelter space and costs for our shelter providers, and the enormous cost to a family associated with moving. Similarly, helping a survivor of domestic violence get a protective order and away from further violence saves costs both to that individual, their children, and to our healthcare, social service, and government systems. Debt collectors specifically target Alaskans because of the PFD, and there has been a surge in debt collection cases filed in the last few years. ALSC is often the only hope for individuals to fight stale or illegal debts or to reach a payment plan with a large out-of-state debt collector that will have the right to garnish an Alaskan's income if they get a judgment against them. And a final example of how legal aid garners such a large return on investment is that we help to maintain health care coverage for the most vulnerable among us. Just recently, we helped a very disabled elder from rural Alaska who requires nursing home level of care, and he was facing the loss of the benefits that provided that care. The reason? He had an unusable, broken-down vehicle in rural Alaska that was titled in his name. Our attorney stepped in to sort through the law and the paperwork and resolve the problem without any interruption to benefits. In yet another recent situation, we assisted a veteran with upgrading his discharge from the military, a battle he has fought for the last 15 years. He now has health care through the VA and can access treatment for very serious health problems. Research conducted by national experts released just last year has shown that our Community Justice Worker Program, which is an innovative program that trains individuals throughout Alaska who are not lawyers to provide targeted legal advice, has a 25-to-1 return on investment. In the last 2 years, this program has concentrated its work in disaster impact areas throughout the state. Despite this hard work by ALSC and our many partners in justice, Alaska continues to face a crisis when it comes to Alaskans being able to identify and get help for their civil legal problems. Last year, we turned away hundreds of families who sought help for very compelling needs. On average, we turn away one family for every one that we help, and not because there aren't laws to protect them, but because we didn't have the resources to help them. Our target population continues to grow each year, and the funding is not keeping pace. The funding is about half of what it was 40 years ago, but the poverty population has more than doubled. 1 in 8 Alaskans are eligible for our services, 1 in 6 children, 1 in 9 seniors, and 1 in 5 rural residents. HB 48 relates to one of our critical funding sources, the Civil Legal Services Fund. And as Ms. Meacham described, the fund at the legislature's discretion is funded by 50% of the state's share of civil punitive damage awards and up to 10% of the court system filing fees collected in the most recent fiscal year. In FY25, $312,600 is being appropriated, and in FY27, $306,400 is being appropriated. HB would increase that 10% of the court system filing fees to 25%. So for the current fiscal year, that would be approximately an additional $486,900 for a total of $781,500. For every extra $100,000 we receive, we estimate we can help another 182 Alaskans. In the 33rd legislative session, the Senate passed the same version of the bill unanimously. We estimate low-income Alaskans experience approximately 130,000 legal problems every year, but national data shows that low-income individuals receive help for just about 8% of these problems. When we turn people away, they often have nowhere else to go, and the result is a cascade of legal, social, and economic consequences. Civil legal assistance is critical to help those who need it, often a lifeline, but the cost of providing is increasing along with the demand. If our funding does not keep pace, we will be forced to turn away hundreds and hundreds more, and HB 48 is critical to adequately funding civil legal services and to address the justice crisis in Alaska. I thank you very much for your consideration.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Hum. We also have Nancy Mead with the Alaska Court System, as well as Sandra Muller with the Community and Regional Affairs for members' questions. We will go to public testimony at this time, and we will go to Yakutat, where we'll hear from James Ross. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your 2 minutes of testimony.
Hello, thank you. My name is James Ross. I'm a lifelong 60-plus year Alaskan, currently residing in Yakutat. I am in full support of HB 48. Alaska Legal Services helped my older brother establish a will, which without their help would not have been achievable. They also helped me through a very complex legal system of closing his estate after his death, a process that I would not have been able to navigate on my own. This may seem like a small thing, but it was huge to our family. Alaska Legal Services allows many Alaskans to accomplish and be represented with legal issues that they would otherwise not be able to achieve. For many, they are a godsend, and in my situation, they certainly were. The work they do for Alaskans is critical and should be supported by each and every one of you by voting for HB 48. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Ross. We will go to Willow, where we'll hear from Lori Proctor. Please identify yourself and proceed with your 2 minutes of testimony.
Hi, my name is Lori Proctor, and I am calling to testify regarding HB 48. I was a patient advocate for 6 years at Sunshine Community Health Center in Willow, and I had many senior patients that used Alaska Legal Services. Some just needed legal questions answered, and some needed legal representation. The seniors, a lot of them were just living solely on Social Security, so they couldn't afford to get an attorney on their own. This was such a blessing to them, and I just can't say enough good things about Alaska Legal. They've saved many people that didn't really have anywhere else to go and were totally surprised there was even this service available in the state of Alaska. And I just feel like anything that would go towards that Alaska Legal and any more money would be a godsend for the people of Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Proctor. We will go to Anchorage, where we will hear from Margie Stone King. Please identify yourself and proceed with your 2 minutes of testimony.
Good morning, Co-Chair Hoffman. This is Marge Stone King. I'm the Advocacy Director with AARP Alaska. And older adults have unique health and social needs. Many are on fixed incomes, and often older adults depend on government benefits and services with complex requirements. Navigating that system can require access to competent legal assistance. Additional examples of legal help for seniors include securing in-home care for eligible seniors to avoid the need for more expensive and remote care, preventing elders from losing housing due to predatory lending practices, illegal foreclosure or eviction, ensuring access to transportation and services needed for seniors to remain in their home, assisting elders with getting their affairs in order, such as the previous speaker mentioned, in order that they can securely manage drafting wills, advance directives, and powers of attorney, and protecting elders from financial exploitation, neglect, and abuse through civil protective orders. People with low incomes, including older adults, are eligible to receive legal free services from legal aid lawyers under the Older Americans Act. And as a grantee of that funding stream, Alaska Legal Services is able to serve only about 100 older Alaskans, low-income low-income Alaskans. They are able to augment that with state funding and with private fundraising, that they are able to serve more than 1,500 seniors by multiplying those federal funds. But with the current statutory formula, they don't have the capacity to meet that demand of low-income seniors. They still turn away one Alaskan in need for every one they support. So AARP fully supports updating the statutory formula to increase court fees designated to the Civil Legal Services Fund from 10% to 25% to help seniors remain independent and in their own homes. Thank you so much for hearing my testimony this morning.
Thank you, Ms. Stone King, for your testimony. Ms. Meacham, do you have any closing comments before we go to fiscal notes? No closing comments. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 48 has two fiscal notes. These are updated for the current year, so they're numbered 3 and 4. The first is from the judicial branch of government. In the trial courts, they give a zero fiscal note because all of the funds that come in, they remit to the general fund. The second is numbered fiscal note number 4. It's from the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, the Community and Regional Affairs Division, that allocation. It reflects that there is, in the governor's existing FY27 request, $306,400 of designated general fund from the Legal Services Fund. And that if the bill passes in FY27, that would need to increase by 459.5 from the same fund source. And you'll see in the out years that those aggregate to 765.9. And then that's reflected in the change in revenues line where 459.5 of UGF under the bill would become the DGF that funds the expenditure.
Thank you, Senator Keel. Are there questions on the fiscal note at this point? Seeing none, we will set this bill aside for further consideration at a later date. That concludes the agenda for today. This morning, this afternoon, we will be having the capital budget in front of us at 1:30. Which will be chaired by Senator Stedman with his robust capital budget. With that, we are adjourned.